This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, what up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball. You can listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show daily, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 3 Pacific. We'll be live in New Orleans, Louisiana next week. You get a chance to hear it, and I think we're also going to do some live All Ball podcasts as well. More details are to come. In the meantime, let me get to my guest today, okay? At the time of this recording, the first round of the Sweet 16 happened last night. Gonzaga goes down. Arizona goes down. A guy who used to compete against Arizona was at UCLA. He's coached at essentially every level of Division I college basketball and got to the tournament at every level of Division I college basketball. Mark Gottfried is my guest. Let me start, Mark. You and I have known each other for a long time. We'll go back. We'll do the whole through your career, your life, and all that stuff pod. I want to do that, and your dad, and all the different trips. It's kind of an amazing life, and I know there's more to come. But let's start with this. Why do you think Gonzaga, who's only been to two Final Fours, but they've had this unbelievable two-plus decades of dominance in their conference, and now seven straight years of Sweet 16, last night they go down. Why do you think they haven't won a national championship yet?
Well, I think my first thought would be, you know, I think when you play in the WCC compared to playing in the ACC or SEC, you know, you go through about 2 months, maybe even a little more, where, you know, the competition level is just not, you know, what it's going to be at the ACC or SEC level or the Pac-12 level. You know, you're talking about, you know, rolling into, you know, some of the teams in their league and being able to pretty much dominate them. And I'm not sure that prepares them. I know they do a good job in November and December. You know, Mark always goes and tries to schedule some really high quality opponents. But, you know, at some point when you meet, you know, the guards are bigger, the forwards are bigger, a little bit more athletic, a little stronger, you know, 1 through 8 on your roster probably. I think it plays a factor. And I don't know the answer for them. But, you know, I just think the teams that go through the wars in the, you know, for example, you know, I was in the SEC for 11 years and the ACC for 6. You know, you're used to seeing guys that are bigger, stronger, faster, a little more physical. And as I watched the game last night, I think especially late in the game, it probably, you know, that's my opinion. I think it kind of comes out.
No, I do too. I think the and maybe there's two different parts that people get caught up on, right? I don't think it means the WCC doesn't have very good teams. St. Mary's is a very good team. But there's no way you can replicate the level of athlete that they saw last night, that they saw Memphis in the WCC. You just cannot. No. And then it's also the depth of athleticism, the depth of challenge, not just with each team, but like you said, like, look, even in a down year like this year in the ACC, like a down year, you still got to go beat Virginia and Tony Bennett in Charlottesville, right? And a down, you know, and all those kids, even if they're not as good or they haven't gelled as well as you'd hope, they were all recruited at the ACC level. Like there's just there's an attrition factor to it. But I think more than anything, it's the game is just faster, stronger, a little bit longer. And the things that you can get away with, you can't get away with as much. So, but here's the part that I found a little bit alarming. And I don't know where you are with Mark as a coach. I think he's a gem of a coach. I think he's a gem of a guy. But there's a little bit of denial there. After the game, he said, you know, we just didn't, you know, basically we just didn't make shots we normally make. Like, if that's what you saw when you watched the game, and he may just be saying that, you know, so it doesn't put blame on the kids. But I watched it and thought they got pushed around. Yeah. You know, that it not as much as they got pushed around by Baylor, but Baylor just completely intimidated them, took them out of everything they wanted to do. Yeah. And the last two games, they got pushed around a little bit. And I don't know. So you've been a head coach. You've been at those press conferences. How honest do you think Mark was in his assessment that we just need to make shots?
Well, I think every coach, to be honest, and you know the drill. I mean, you're not going to go in there and just completely expose every thought you have, you know, for fear of all the different things. You know, you got players, recruits, you know, everybody's watching your fan base. And so you're always a little bit guarded. So I think when you get in a press conference, especially after a game, you got to take that one as a little bit of a, you know, okay, you know, you know, there's a lot going through your mind when you sit up there and you're trying to say the right thing. So you're not ever going to be probably a completely, you know, transparent in that regard. You know, I go back, Doug, I remember, I think it was 2012. I'm at NC State. We played San Diego State in the first round. We're the 11th seed. I think they're the 6th seed. And, you know, our players are looking down to the other end during warmups at that group saying, come on, like, really? And I'm not disrespecting anything San Diego State because they've just been phenomenal. But, you know, the guy that in the media guide says I'm 6'8" is really 6'5.5". And the two guard who says he's 6'6" is 6'3". And I remember our players at NC State looking down there saying, come on, like, really? And, you know, we end up beating them. And, you know, we went to the Sweet 16 that year. But so I think with Mark, now he has signed back-to-back now. You're talking about, you know, back-to-back high school player of the year, two straight years. So from a talent perspective, he's getting some pretty good players. And, you know, the kid Suggs last year was amazing. But I just think at the end of the day, 1 through 8, it's hard to get the same level athlete that, you know, some of the other teams are getting. So, you know, I would temper what he says maybe after the game. At the same time, I just think there's a little bit – that's just a little different level. It is what it is.
There's also a there's also the aspect of the SEC and what Muss is doing at Arkansas is what you did at Alabama, right? Where I kind of awoke a little bit of a sleeping giant, and you know, even if it's seen as a football school, they still love some good basketball. You were at your what do you see? How has Muss been able to do this in short order? I mean, obviously, well, everybody does the transfer portal is an easy answer, but everybody's doing the transfer portal. What are you seeing that he's been able to do?
Well, number one, I think he's really good. You know, he proved it at Nevada. You know, and you got to remember, a lot of people forget, you know, he was the head coach in the NBA a couple of years too. So, you know, what happens when you're in the NBA, you get exposed to so much, so many situations, four quarters in every game, out of bounds, late, you know, clock situation. I mean, there's so many things that I think has helped him really. He's really good, I think, as a basketball coach. What I think he's also done really well, Doug, I think he's, you know, here's what happened with this whole transfer portal thing is some coaches are diving into it and some aren't. And you look at his backcourt, and he's got some guys from some other places who are probably a little older. I don't know exactly their years, but, you know, a little bit more mature. And he's done a great job with that. And we're in a era where you almost have to change a little bit as a coach and adapt to the fact that you're going to have young kids. And if the other guy's got juniors and seniors and they're 22, 23, 24 years old and they're pretty good players, you know, I think, you know, you end up with an advantage. I think Eric's done a really good job with that. I think he's kind of had a good blend of still getting a really good high school player, but at the same time, he's added in the older player. And then I just think he just does a really good job. And, you know, so he's got him ready. I think this is two straight Elite Eights. And, you know, you may break through here and get in the Final Four. And I think a lot of times it's just kind of that, you know, breaking through one more game. And once you do it, then – you know, your program field. But I'm going to tell you now, Arkansas, you talk about a basketball fan base. Now, they love football. But what Leland did there, you walk into that place now. It's a basketball – Arkansas and Kentucky, in my opinion, are different than the rest of the jobs in that league. You've got a fan base that's a probably more passionate than anybody else in that league. So, you know, they're fired up today and getting ready to, you know, have a chance to be in the Final Four again.
Yeah, you probably don't know this. I kind of convinced Dana Altman to take that job that he had for like 10 days or however long he had it. Because the exact same thing. We were talking at the time, and I had, I don't know if I tweeted about it or I talked about it on radio or on TV about how good a job it is. Because of, like you said, like in the SEC, like they legitimately care there. Whereas they don't care. They just kind of throw money at it and, you know, expect you to, you know, get it going and have people show up when football's over at some other schools. But he just wasn't a good fit, obviously, for that place, that environment he walked into. But it's a place where they legitimately care and are passionate about it. All right, tonight. So we're going to try and drop this before the UCLA game. First, I want to go back to 95. 95, second round. Was there a timeout before Tyus went length of the court in Boise?
Oh, yeah. Yep. We had a timeout, and the kid Winfield had just made the shot for Missouri. And, you know, a lot of people, what they don't realize on that, Doug, is that, you know, we had been a couple years before and played when the Fab Five were freshmen. And it was almost an identical play where Tyus stole the ball. And, you know, we're driving in Tucson there. We're playing a game at the McHale Center, and we got a chance to beat them, you know, at the wire. And at the last second, he passed it to Ed. And I think it was either Jimmy King or Ray Jackson stole the ball, and we went to overtime and lost. So now here we are 2 years later, and it's kind of same situation. We did a drill every day in practice, a six-second drill where you got to go length of the floor. And, you know, Tyus is Tyus, and he's just so fast and good and everything. So, you know, we had a timeout, and we broke the huddle, and I remember Jim Herrick grabbing Tyus by the elbow and just told him, Tyus, shoot the ball. No matter what, I want to just shoot it. Don't pass it, shoot it. And, you know, what it did, it kind of gave Tyus the confidence. It kind of took the, you know, the decision out of his mind to say, hey, look, if I'm heading to the basket, I'm shooting the ball. And, you know, obviously he just made a phenomenal play. And next thing you know, we're off to the races. And, you know, sometimes in the tournament, it's almost a game like that, Doug, that kind of propels you. All of a sudden, mentally, you're like, okay, we got through that one. And now this is on now. Like, you know, we're going to win this thing now. You know, the momentum is in our favor. The wind's at your back, you know, all those type things. And that play did it for that team, in my opinion.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, though, didn't he commit before, like right when you walked into his house on the visit?
Yeah. That was the year, Doug. I don't know that your true basketball fan might remember these names, but obviously Kevin Ollie, who did a great, you know, at UConn and had a great career. It's a little guard named KJ Roberts out of Seattle. And those were the three point guards that we really kind of, you know, zoomed in on a little bit. And we were going to get one of the three. And, you know, Kevin, you know, was probably the highest rated guy, Kevin Ollie. And Tyus knew what he wanted to do. He knew where he wanted to go. And quite honestly, he took everybody by surprise. He was just ready. You don't need to pull all that stuff out. You don't need to give me your song and dance. You don't need to, you know, sell me. I'm coming. And I was like, okay. And, you know, the great legendary coach Ron Palmer at Long Beach Poly, I remember him telling us, you guys got no idea how good a guard you just got. And he was probably right, to be quite honest. And, you know, Tyus is one of those guys. You put him in a game, you can't take him out. They got to leave him in. Every time we put him in, you know, even as a freshman.
Good things just happen.
Yeah, good things happen. Yeah, I'm not taking that guy out of the game. We're going to leave him in. And he just he was just terrific.
You know, it was – but what I recall, though, was that Coach Herrick hadn't seen him play. Mm-hmm. And he went to the CIF finals, and Tyus didn't play great. And he walked out of the gym thinking, oh, hell, we got to go get another point guard.
I remember Jim had a friend of his, just a friend from Pepperdine, his Pepperdine days, that went with him to a game after Tyus had signed. And, you know, it was the fall. He was a fall signee. So, you know, during his senior year. So on the ride down, Jim told his buddy, said, I'm not going to tell you who we signed, but you tell me who, you know, what you think. Well, they watched the whole game. And his friend said, I hope he didn't sign anybody in that game. You know, Tyus was kind of a non-factor. And even when he came to a campus in the fall, you know, all the NBA players play in the men's gym, and, you know, they're playing pickup games. And
you know, you really didn't hear a lot about, you know, guys come back and talk every day who played good, you know, this, that, the other. And all of a sudden, boy, the season started and it was game on. And, you know, plus he's got such great character and my age, just the whole package. So sometimes you luck into some a little bit in coaching.
Okay. So now let's fast forward to that year, 95. Okay. So you guys, the year before, you'd been beaten by Tulsa. Remember, that was the, when Ed was asked if he knew where Tulsa was and he did not. Right. And you played him in Oklahoma City. That's a great job. I remember, I was the biggest Bruin fan there was. I remember being, it was like at lunchtime or maybe snack or whatever. And most Thursdays of the tournament, I would get out of school. That year, I didn't get out of school. Thursday, my dad would take me out Friday. And I remember I said, I popped into my coach's office. What's the UCLA score? He's like, they're down. How many? 40. I was like, what? but that team wouldn't exist today because you had so many guys, right? You had basically five pros as freshmen. Like the 95 team was so stacked. Basically, everybody was a pro and an NBA player on some level. Mm-hmm. So you survive the second round, right? Missouri was the second round. You get ready for the Sweet 16. Was there a feeling of destiny, or was it like, what is that feeling actually like? Because what happens in the media is we'll have people say, well, you have to survive one of those games in order to win the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes surviving one of those games, kind of like Gonzaga survived Memphis, it actually exposes your flaw. Yeah. And ultimately that becomes, so what was it when you're getting ready for the Sweet 16 in 95, what was that feeling like?
Well, you know, we played Mississippi State. They had Eric Dampier. They were a really good team. We played them up in Oakland. And I do feel like our team kind of felt like not necessarily your team of destiny, but you feel like the way we won that game, you know, it just gave us such a lift, a huge lift, confidence lift, you know, that you survived that one. So I think in our favor, it was big. Let me go back, though, Doug. I think people find this one interesting. In 94, you know, we go to Oklahoma City, like you mentioned. We're playing against Tulsa. And, you know, Ed has made the comment, which we all were like, oh, boy, that one isn't going to go well in Oklahoma City. And Tubby Smith had a really good team, Shea Seals and a bunch of really good players. But, you know, I just remember we had the best practice of the year the day before the game. Best practice. Shoes were squeaking. I mean, it was moving. Couldn't miss a shot in practice. Every drill. I mean, you're thinking. And then the next day, you know, we throw the ball up for the jump ball, start the game. And by the time I sat down with my clipboard there on the bench, I think we're down 18-2. I mean, it was like, what in the world happened? And and then, you know, after that game, quite honestly, we all felt like we were getting fired. You know, Steve Lavin, myself, Lorenzo, Romar, the assistants, Jim. We all had meetings on Monday morning scheduled with Pete Dallas. You know, he called us and said, you guys got to come in. And so for the whole weekend, you know, I had just bought a house first time. I was young, you know, I'm nervous. I'm getting fired. We're all getting fired, you know, on Monday morning. And so the next thing you know, we all kind of go in one by one and, you know, we kind of make it through that day. And then for about 2 weeks, we still thought we were probably going to get fired. You know, Jim's getting fired or we're getting fired, but somebody's getting fired after that game. And then the next year, you know, here we go. And we end up 31-2, you know, Ed is the national player of the year. And, you know, we play Mississippi State and beat them pretty soundly. Then we got to play UConn, who was loaded. I mean, loaded. And they wanted to run, and they had kind of made some comments. A couple of their guys did, like, nobody can run with us. And, you know, I think we put 102 or 104 on them that game. But they were really talented. And, but, you know, Tyus was so good, just so good. And Ed was so good. And Toby and JR, I mean, I can go through all of them, but Charles. But, you know, we became a team that just started to believe we're going to win this thing. We're going to win it. We're going to win the national championship. And here's another thing, Doug, I think what happens. The UCLAs and the Kentuckys and Duke right now, and you could see last night at the end of the game and the Duke game, because those kids have Duke on the front of their jersey, from the day they sign, there's an expectation in their mind that they are going to win a national championship. That's why I went there. That's why I go to Duke. That's why I went to UCLA. That's why I go, you know, to Kentucky. And sometimes I think programs like that, your players, there's a little bit different edge. Not just happy to be here. There's an expectation that we're going to win it or we should win it.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, let's have this discussion, because there's a couple different parts to it. I agree. I think it's a little bit like this. Like Roach and Banchero took over again. Two games in a row, Roach and Paolo took over. Mm-hmm. And I think of those guys as, it's not just the expectation of Duke, but those main court games, right? Mm-hmm. From EYBL to the time they were eighth, ninth, like they were always, they're not Aux gym guys. Now, look, it's hard to play against those Aux gym guys because they've been told they're not main court guys their whole life. And that's a little bit of what I think, you know, those Arkansas guys did to Gonzaga, right? They heard about Chet and all these Gonzaga dudes. And there's, so I think that start of the game, a lot of times those, the teams that are a little underrated or the players that were overlooked, whatever, that's where their energy and their passion and all that, and just the toughness that's built in because they've been told no. But you get to big moments, and I mean, Roach and Boncaro, it's like, that's nothing new to them. Give me the ball, I know what to do. So I agree with you there. What about managing all of that and building all of that at that level, right? Where, yes, those guys came there with that expectation. But as you know, from UCLA and from Alabama and from NC State, all those guys came with the expectation of taking the big shot. How do you do the role management, even when you get this late in the season?
Well, that's where, you know, obviously as a coach, you've got to be really good in that regard, because all of them, not just them, the players, their parents, their AU coach, they're all expecting their guy to be the guy, and they're not going to all be the guy. It just, you know, it's just not how it works. And, you know, I think coaches that have been there for so long and done it with so many great players, you know, you got to remember too, like with Coach K, and you know, obviously he's one, and most of the world, you know, we don't really know what's inside his practices and what he's saying in the locker room or team meetings, and you know, the bluntness and how he's going to organize, who's going to do what at what point, and who's got the freedom to do a little bit more and who doesn't have the freedom. And sometimes we don't know all those things. You got to remember with him now, you know, he's had to manage LeBron, Kobe, you know, through the Olympics and that group too now. So, you know, he's not afraid to tell somebody, you ain't shooting the ball. You're just not shooting, period. And, you know, where some coaches may not, you know, have that type of stature with those teams. But, Doug, I think you make a great point, and a lot of people may not really understand, you know, that main court. When you play in the AAU scene and you're always on the main court, you're always, you know, where there's other games going over there. And, yeah, there's always a Damian Lillard that probably didn't even play in the main gym. Hell, he was probably in another gym in another, you know, part of town. You know, ends up at Weber State. But you get enough guys that have been in that situation, and in their mind, that's just it's a little different. For example, I thought the guys that came and played for us at UCLA, they know, they feel the expectation level every day, that if you don't meet this expectation level, you're really kind of a failure. It's really unfair. But I told Ben Howland, I told every coach that went through there at UCLA, and not that I have all the answers, but you're going to play about 30 games before the tournament. They're all exhibition games. They don't count, really. The only thing that really counts is the tournament. Well, the players know that. They feel it. You know, you had great teams at Oklahoma State, but that wasn't ingrained in you guys, that, you know, there's this expectation that you have to be all the way here to that level. And so sometimes I think that does help. You know, it doesn't always work that way, but at times I think it does. And I thought late in the game last night with Duke, it was clear.
The example for you guys, even 25 years ago, is Toby, right? So, So Toby stars in the national championship game. And part of it was, I think, the way in which Arkansas played right into your hands, right? Like, you're gonna run and trap us? Okay. But you know, I grew up, as you know, competing against Toby Bailey. He played on Victoria Park, Slam and Jam, right? There were three big clubs, and if they weren't in the finals for every tournament or league or whatever, something was wrong, right? Because it was him and Ricky Price, and something was wrong. The idea is every Sunday of every tournament he ever court. And so he was a freshman. It wasn't that big a stretch for him to perform that well under that bright a spotlight.
I think you're very much right. Doesn't always guarantee, though, that, you know, those guys make every shot. But I do think there's a mindset or an expectation that's a little bit different. In other words, think of it this way. When Kentucky loses and, you know, they got beat by a, you know, that's a tough one when you're in a 2-15 game, you know, 15 seed two game. But regardless, those players, you know, they feel from their fan base every day, you know, Alabama football would be the same way right now. If you're not in the college playoff, that's disappointing. It's just a disappointing year at Alabama football. And so players feel it, coaches feel it, fans expect it. And I think what that does, it causes the players at times and coaches and everybody, it causes to rise you up to another level. You've got to be there. Not that other people don't want to, but you had good teams at Oklahoma State and Notre Dame. I don't know that the same, you know, my teams at Alabama, we never felt that. Like, we never felt that if we don't get to the Final Four, it's a disappointing year. Never felt that. And so it's just different at every school. But I do think you've hit it on a nail on the head when you talk about how they've grown up and playing on that center court. That's a different deal.
Kentucky. It's a different landscape now, right? So instead of just recruiting against Duke and Carolina and maybe the Memphises and then the one-off schools that hire somebody or whatever, now they're competing against the G League Ignite, you know, maybe overseas somewhere else. And then you have the transfer portal. So you're playing, if you play high school kids, they're 19 as freshmen, maybe 20 as freshmen if they're holdbacks, but you're competing against 23, 24-year-old kids. Can Cal get back to where he had been in terms of the consistency of success in the landscape of 2022 and beyond?
Here's my feeling on that one, Doug. And again, I'm never going to question those guys. You know, they've been so good for so long, but I think you got to keep adjusting. For example, I had Dennis Smith, Lorenzo had Markel Fultz. Both of us struggled, you know, with guys like that, not their fault. But if you have five Dennis Smiths at one time, you're probably okay because your talent level is so high. I think Duke did that at times, you know, in the last 10 years ago or so, you know, and Marvin Bagley and the little point guard, I can't remember his name, and, you know, some of those guys. But if you have one or two, they're just too young and they can't carry it yet. But if you have a collection of them, you can. At the same time, the transfer portal, the fifth-year graduate transfer, both that are eligible immediately, I think it's changed the game, even for the high-major Kentucky-type school. And we talked about it with Eric at Arkansas. Your freshmen, who, even though they're really talented, they're still freshmen. And, you know, I think there's a blend nowadays. You got to kind of adjust and maybe look at the fact that I need a 17-point scorer from the WCC or from the MAC or from the Sun Belt who's really good, who's 23, and he transfers up. That guy, I think, in today's game is real valuable, very valuable. Maturity level, older. Because here's the deal. We all know it. If you got a great freshman and you're in a Power 5 conference and your guy averages 17, 18 points a game, He's gone. Don McLean is the leading scorer in the history of UCLA and the Pac-12, which, by the way, his records will never be broken, ever. You can put that one in your pipe and smoke it. They'll never be broken because Don McLean averages 18 a game as a freshman, but stays 4 years. 4 years.
Yeah.
Well, that guy doesn't stay 4 years anymore. He's gone. You know, that guy's got no chance to stay 4 years. So, I think there's a blend now. You got to figure out, I got to get some older. I got to get older somehow. How do I get older is the key, I think, sometimes in today's game.
Okay, Murray State. Why have so many coaches had such success there? Steve Prohm's going back there. He had success there before going to Iowa State. But You were there. I mean, like Mick was there. Like it seems like every guy who goes there wins. Now they're changing leagues and stepping up in league. Why is Murray State such a wellspring for coaches?
I think they're in the right conference for them. You know, I think so many times people leave conferences. Wichita left the Missouri Valley. And it's probably the game has changed on them. Now, Murray State is actually leaving as well this year. They're going to the Missouri Valley, which is a whole different deal than it was playing in the OVC. So, number one, I think Murray State was by and far the best job in their league. In other words, they got the best fan base. They've got the best facility. They have more money than the other teams. When I coached there, it was back in, 95 to 98. You know, you had a recruiting budget, but at that level, you know, if we ran out of money in the month of July and we still needed to buy airline tickets for my coaches to go watch it, they'll find the money. They're going to find the money. All right, here's another 10 grand. You guys go finish out the month of July and go recruit and buy airline tickets and stay in hotels, where a lot of teams in that league, they just don't. They don't have that. They don't have that kind of commitment. So it's the best job. And then I think Murray has done a great job over the years, Doug. They have stayed with their formula. In other words, now, you know, it's maybe a little bit different right now, but they're not afraid to hire that young coach that's been at a high-profile school and bring him in there knowing they're probably going to lose him. They're going to lose him in a few years, but that's okay. And then we'll get another one. I think a lot of times people, they change their, they don't know who they are. And all of a sudden I'm going to recreate who we really are as a program. And Murray has never done that. They've kind of stayed the course. They know they're probably going to lose a Matt McMahon to LSU or somewhere, especially the job he did, which I thought was terrific. You know, Mick did a great job. Billy Kennedy did a great job there. Scott Egger before me did a great job. They all did. But it's just a good basketball job. I'm a little worried for him, though, going in the Missouri Valley. Different animal, completely different animal than, you know, than having to play in the OVC. So we'll see how that plays out.
I think they're more invested. The interesting part is I do think, you know, in terms of their financial investment, I think Missouri Valley is more invested, right? In terms of winning. On the other hand, I'm not sure there's a level. It's more Midwestern, right? It's a little bit more plodding players than in the OVC, where I feel like it was a lot of speed and quickness and smaller teams.
I agree.
So St. Peter's tonight takes on Purdue. So you've been on both sides of this deal, right? Where you have these gigantic big dudes and you've had the undersized team. Give me your sense of what you would do if you're Shaheen Holloway. They got two dudes over 6'7" on their entire roster. Zach Edey blocks out the sun, but it is college basketball. Like, so what do you do if you're Shaheen?
Well, I think here's the thing too with that team right now. You can listen to his comments, and they've taken such a they have so much pride in how tough they are. And now that's important. But like you said, there does come a day when the ball's in the air and I got to get a rebound, and that guy's 7 foot and I'm 6'6" and I'm gonna have a hard time getting the ball.
He's 7'3", 7'3", 7'4" and it's not one of those, like, it's not like you said with the mid, like he's listed 6'8", he's really 6'5". No, he's really that big.
And so at some point in time, you know, not that they can't win. I mean, hell, they've proven it right now. They've done it, but I think they'll have their hands full. Now and I think Matt's done a great job too. And I think they're pretty mental. They all are. All the teams at this point left, they're mentally pretty strong and pretty tough. Now I think it's St. Pete's. They've done such a great job of instilling that hunger, and their guard play's terrific. But think about this: last night in the Duke game, and there was a point, I think it was about a minute and a half, 2 minutes ago in the game, and Texas Tech, you know, they remind me a little bit of Houston. They look all the same size.
Yes.
They can switch everything. Yeah, I don't know who the point guard, the two, the three, the four. We're all just kind of, but you know, at some point in the game, there the ball came off the rim, and that big dude for Duke, he just goes up two hands, and
Mark Williams,
I'm getting the rebound. I'm getting the rebound. You guys can't get this rebound at this point in the game, or I'm blocking your shot, and the guy takes it to the middle and a little kind of baby hook there, and I'm just bigger. I'm bigger and longer, and at some point in time, that kind of wins out. Doesn't always, but kind of does. So I think St. Pete's going to have their hands full with that big boy in the middle, but nobody gave him a chance till now, so – I'd hold my breath to make too strong a prediction. So we'll see.
Last thing. There's an expectation that he's going to get the Seton Hall job, right? Which is going back home. Mm-hmm. That's what you did. Mm-hmm. If you were to give a guy who's going to his alma mater advice, what would it be?
I would say, Doug, it's a great question. Number one, I would give you the advice that John Wooden gave me, the legendary coach. I sat in his living room in Encino and talked about, I'm going to go to Murray State, but hopefully one day, you know, I can end up back in my alma mater. And I asked him, I said, Coach, why didn't you ever go back to Purdue? And he said, Mark, don't ever underestimate how big the expectations end up being the fan base has for you, but also the expectations you put on yourself, because it becomes you have a passion for that school that it's not just a job. It's different. And that can be good. Like for me, I was at Alabama 11 years and we had a great run, but you know, I never left. I turned down every job that was offered to me, every single one, you know, because I'm at my alma mater. I'm at Alabama. I remember they named the road. They named the road leading up to in Knoxville, up to the football stadium, Philip Fulmer Way. And they fired him the next year. They fired a guy. And so when it's your alma mater, you get a little bit cloudy with that. You know, in other words, if he goes somewhere else and he does a great job and a job, you know, it's a job. Not that you don't care, but when it's your alma mater, I just think you got to be a little careful. It can be great. It can be wonderful. But, you know, I remember Philip Fulmer said, it's bricks and the bricks will never love you back. You can love the bricks on the building, but the bricks on the building will never love you back. And I think he was right. So I think that would be my only piece of advice is it's a great opportunity, but, you know, be careful because it's a little different.
Mark, you're the best. We're doing this again. Let's do it after we get we figure out who's going to maybe Elite Eight or Final Four. And I want to get into all the different – you have so many different great stories and angles. But in the meantime, I really appreciate you, and we'll talk to you soon.
You got it, brother. Anytime.
Well, I'm sure glad you enjoyed that. I did as well. We'll get you ready for the next games. We'll drop a pod probably tomorrow on tonight's games as well. UCLA and Carolina at St. Peter's and Purdue and all of it. All of it. All of it. I do think Miami wins. I think I like Providence to cover. I think that's going to be a close game. I mean, self is amazing. But think about what Providence or Kansas can do. Like they might get a double digit seed to go to the Final Four. That's pretty remarkable. And then we look at Villanova, and could I make the case that's the best program in America? Think about the consistency of success, winning your league, two national championships, and they're one game away from another Final Four. Crazy, crazy stuff. All right, we'll get to all that in the next pod. In the meantime, my thanks to Mark Godfrey. My thanks for you for listening. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special mom in your life. And what better way than with the Osea's limited edition skincare sets, featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets that are perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their advanced eye care duo brightens, awakens, and firms the skin around your eyes, while the golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths the skin all over. Both sets are packaged in giftable boxes. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. And the best part? For a limited time, you can save up to $46 on Osea's sets. Plus, get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. This Mother's Day, get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. Go to OseaMalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off site-wide.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.